everyone. Welcome all, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 42. Step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. This one is entitled, it's Rogue. Rogue One. Because we have a special guest here, and we are going to be talking about solo gaming and versus non-solo gaming. So I thought that was a good title for this one. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. And for more information about our podcast, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com or check us out on Facebook, The Portal. And our Twitter handle is at PortalGaming60. Hello, hello, everybody. I am your host, The Brant. And with me this time, we have a special guest.
Hey, my peoples, what's up? I'm Jason. I'm a regular at the Portal Gaming Store. And I have my own podcast, which I'll talk about in whenever he lets me talk about it.
Nice. Yeah, so we have Jason here, and Jason is in my house right now. So that's where we are. We're not even in separate places, and we're recording.
It's a nice basement you got here, buddy.
In the basement here. So, yeah, ironically, you know, it's a store podcast, but the amount of times I record at the store
right,
are minimal. So kind of funny on that that front. So, yeah, Jason's here, is going to join us and, yeah, talk about his podcast and some of those things. Quickly, before we talk to Jason here, I just want to put a couple events out there, which I've been putting out. If you've been listening, you know, so I'll just run through them quickly. But International Tabletop Day is coming up at the store. It's going to be April 29th. Huge day for us. We are open all 24 hours. So literally Saturday at 12:01 a.m. to Saturday at 11:59 p.m., and including both midnights. Because people try to ask me, like, which midnight is a.m. and p.m. and where? And I'm like, all of them. All of it is open for. So we'll have gaming going on, so definitely stop by for that. And then we have the Silk City Board Game Group, as always, which is meeting Saturday, April 1st at the library, 12 to 4:30. And I forgot the flyer, so I can't remember the games. Glux, Ulm, Vikings Gone Wild, New York Slice. Good job. Jason's a listener, too.
Yes.
So there's all those, so definitely check those out. And you go to the Silk City thing, I forgot.
I do.
So there's that. So definitely check those things out. Howdy, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, it's a blast. Thanks for being kind of my wife was our first special guest with the new format, I suppose. But you're our first special guest here, so it's exciting. So
yeah, Brandon always asked me to like talk, and I'd love to talk. You don't even have to ask me to talk, so it's, I just just fit right in.
Well, the key is getting me to shut up.
Right.
And when we first started doing the podcast, the thing for everybody, like especially like family or friends, was like, is Brian going to talk? Are we going to get to hear Brian talk? And I think we've done a good job getting closer to 50-50 than people would expect.
Pretty good.
It's a lot more than a regular conversation.
I think Brian's secret is that he comes with more preparation. So it's like, oh, he has some stuff written down. I got to let him talk a little bit.
Yeah, that last one we did together.
I have three lists to your one. Brian, go for it.
That was excellent. That was fun. Nice. Jason, why don't you let us know about you? What type of gamer are you? When you've been in the hobby? What's going on? Just tell us whatever you want to tell us about gaming. Sure. Whatever it is.
Definitely. Okay. So I'm from New York City. And I was a player in the local game groups, the Complete Strategist, the Brooklyn Strategist, anything with the name Strategist in it, basically. Started as a D&D player. So then I came into the hobby via Munchkin. I know a lot of groans collectively, but I still kind of like my Munchkin and small doses and everything. That was kind of my gateway into different stuff, and then also Lords of Waterdeep. I was at a con and I saw this thing, this big old, you know, board, and they're like, this is a Euro game, but don't let that scare you. I'm like, what's a Euro game? I'm not going to be scared by something I don't know. So then I played it and it was awesome. Got into it. Then I discovered cooperative games. Pandemic is currently my favorite game ever.
Oh, nice.
So then once I discovered Pandemic, it was no turning back. I just, you know, my wife will tell you the shelf just filled from there. So, that actually, so I got into the cooperative game. I played Pandemic by myself, and then I got Sentinels of Multitude to play that by myself. My wife does not game. I am not blessed like Brant over here, who has a gaming wife or some other people who have like gaming spouses or mates or whatever. My wife does not game. I have some friends. I don't have a lot of friends that game, so that's kind of how I got into the solo game thing. I got into it so much, eventually I got into a podcast, hooked up with Anthony from Board Gamers Anonymous, another member of the Dice Tower Network. He was good enough to let me on. I knew things and stuff, and we had good chemistry. So now we have a podcast called Table for One. It is called that now. We are in the middle of a rebranding because what we found is people say solo games, and it's like, oh, solo games? Not for me. I don't play solo. I was like, well, we listen to our podcast. We've had Ignacy Trevicek on. We've had Chris Seslick, designer of One Deck Dungeon on. We've had Isaac Childress from Gloomhaven on. We talk about Time Stories, Pandemic Legacy, all the hottest games that just happen to play solo. So we're kind of in the middle of doing something else with the podcast. It's keeping it focused on solo playable games, but to be accessible to more people just so that they know off the outset, hey, you know, I'm going to get something out of this. So that's where we are now, and that's kind of what I'm doing. And, you know, Brant heard, like I said, Brant heard that I like to talk into a mic. He's like, all right, come on, Jay. Let's do it. So here I am.
Yeah, definitely. So you said Pandemic is your favorite game.
By a long shot. I've had some flirts. Mage Knight is close, that big solo game and everything. But for like Pandemic, I'm guessing like Pandemic, just raw Pandemic, if you just kind of lay it out there with no expansions and whatever it is, it's not whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's like the best engine to do whatever you want. So like you can have a Pandemic Iberia where the little meeples are, or the little Khazees kids are running around. They're like Typhus and everything. You could do Cthulhu. You could do the Legacy thing. It's just I just really get really excited about everything they do to innovate on the game. And that just makes it more and more like, okay, this is my favorite game. So.
So you also said solo games are not, well, we'll talk about that.
Yes,
but
we'll talk about that.
But in terms of a strong opportunity for you, so a big section of your games, you were telling me earlier that basically if a game can't be played solo, some kind of variant online, it makes it a lot less likely you'll purchase the game.
If the game's over $30.
Gotcha.
So, like, I'll buy a little game or whatever it is. I have a pack of games. I have a, like, anybody see me in the store? I have this pack that I carry with me. I managed to squeeze like 35 games in there. Just like, you know, the Love Letter and the Tides of Time and like little tiny games. They're not all solo. They're just like games that I like to bring. But if I'm going to spend $30+, I want some mileage. I
mean, yeah.
You know, like how many people have bought these giant games and they just cannot get them to the table? Like last year I bought Mechs vs. Minions, which was, you know, pretty mm-hmm. pricey. I know people like to say this is a great deal, but I don't have a group to play that with yet, and it's kind of this big honking game. So it's like, all right, I'm going to throw this on the table and play through the campaign myself. This is great. You know, I'm not a big TV watcher.
Yeah.
You know, I've tried like different shows. Like I tried The Magicians. I don't know if you've ever seen The Magicians on Sci-Fi.
Not sure. I don't think I've seen it.
Pass. Or like different other shows like that. And it's like, why am I doing this for? I could just do something. I could just play a game, and I like playing games. So, you know, it just takes up my evening, you know? And it's the same thing as playing a video game or watching a TV. I just happen to play board games and have my little table down in the basement and everything. So, why not?
So, Mechs vs. Minions, I don't know if you heard my story, but my best friend from growing up works mm-hmm. at Riot Games.
Okay.
He is the number one most non-gamer of all my friends I've ever had.
Okay.
So we never did anything gaming related, you know, hanging out. But definitely still in contact with him from elementary school.
Right.
And he works there, doesn't play a lick of League of Legends. He's tried because they encourage him to play while he's working.
Right.
Doesn't play video games at all. Doesn't play board games. Has played a few board games. He'll play Code Names and stuff like that I've sent him out there.
Sure.
But he got me a copy of Mechs vs. Minions from the company. So mm-hmm. that was pretty cool. So I got access to that game, which was really exciting. So I played a bunch with my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I played with my wife a little bit, maybe. So, yeah. I mean, the presentation of that game is just...
Yeah, it's out of this world. It's like, yeah. You know, I had to... Like, feeling the cards in that game makes me happy. And
yeah.
like you know, just like playing with the materials, it stands out because I'll play another game, for example, like Aeon's End or something. I feel the cards and I feel like if I shuffle them twice, they're gonna fall apart in my hand. So like feeling the components in Mechs vs. Minions is like, okay, I wish that more companies could do this, but I understand why they can't. So what are you gonna do?
So did you solo Pandemic Legacy?
I did. Thankfully, did not. I would have if I didn't have a group.
Oh, you had a group to play with.
I have a group back in New York of gamers that I play with.
Okay.
So we played Pandemic Legacy, and we've played Time Stories. That's my group for them.
Okay, gotcha.
So then I'm only in Connecticut. It's only 2 hours away, so I can just drive down and hook that up. But Pandemic Legacy Season 2, because it's 18 plays, that might not happen.
Gotcha.
Like, they'd have to wait for me to come back every month.
Right.
So I'm looking for a group. Hey, everybody, nice. The co-op friends that are, you know, that are at the store, you know, looking for a Pandemic Legacy Season 2 group.
I have two Pandemic Legacy games going on. Mm-hmm. So Brian and Larry and myself have played through, and I think we're in August. And then I just played with my daughter and my wife, and we got to September.
Okay.
So I now have surpassed that other group, but, you know, we haven't played in 8 months, so I figured, see ya, I'm going to finish this thing. So. and more often play with my daughter. My wife doesn't want to play every game, so she kind of jumps in when she can, and my daughter.
Right.
My daughter's got that game down now. At 7 years old, I mean, she'll see moves that I don't see. And be like, oh, we should go here. And then at times, she doesn't. She's clueless. But it's interesting the times she's like, oh, we should just go do this. Or, oh, we should be this character. This will be way better at the beginning of the game. She's dead on. She picks the two characters that get us through. So
nice.
I think we've yet to lose, actually. But with two and three, it's a lot easier. Cool. Nice. So is that. So let's talk about what's on your table. So what have you been playing lately?
All right, let's feed the beast. Let's talk about some games. All right. So we just played some Ninja Turtles. Yep. So I know Brant talked about this last time on the podcast just like a little bit. He suckered me in. He's like, I soloed this game. So I'm like, ooh, a solo playable game. And then
I did.
It's a one versus all game. So it actually, as I'll talk about a little bit, you can actually kind of put solo variants on a lot of games, so I could see someone coming up with an engine that simulates the Game Master, and then you just play as your turtles. This game, like, it was pretty cool. It is a dice chucker.
Yeah.
Not like chucking every single, like, you know, thing you do. Actually, yeah, you do, because you chuck some dice at the beginning, and it sets up your actions, right? So you got your swords for attack, you got ninja stars for rage attack, and you're rolling as all four turtles. And once you set that up, you then roll dice in order to resolve like combat and stuff. So like, boo boo boo, like dice, you know, dice chucking, which I guess is, you know, pretty par for the course for games like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was okay. You know, I think it might appeal to people who aren't into that heavy descent.
Yeah.
Type stuff, or they're freaked out by the 17 mouths on the others. minions or anything like that. So like, this is like kid friendly. Like you were saying before, if the missions are nice and short,
yeah,
I could see that appealing as like an intro to a dungeon crawling or whatever it is, scenario based play. Is it my favorite? I mean, I'm a Mage Knight fan, and I know I'm gonna be a Gloomhaven
whole different
fan.
World.
So like, if I'm gonna crawl somewhere, I want to, like, you know, have like heavy options and card play and increasing power. Like, this game doesn't quite have that, but I can definitely see playing this with, you know, a family scenario. So that seemed pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, where I would start with this is the production is beautiful.
Yeah, okay.
The art is amazing. I mean, I know IDW publishes their comics, so they've got those comic book artists, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The minis are nice. They're not stellar, but they're nice. They're, you know, it was a little hard to tell each turtle.
I need, like, at least color their bandanas, please.
Yeah.
Like, I know they're carrying nunchucks. I know Wheels and Nunchucks, but can we, like, not have a green blob plastic? Give me some, like, blue bandana.
Well, now, the original, you could see, not this art, but originally I know the art had the four red bandanas, because that's how they originally were. They didn't have different colors, and that was the late 80s, early 90s cartoon, probably early 90s, I think, but I can't remember exactly, that put in the colored bandanas so that, you know, people could tell them apart. They went back to it on this cover art and the art in the game, but anyway, so they had that. So, but IDW has not been making the best games as of the last 2 or 3 years. I thought this is a pretty good production for them in terms of all that. So that was nice.
Like, Machi Koro from them was a massive disappointment.
Yeah.
You know, like, they give you this giant box, and it's a deck of cards.
Yeah.
And a dice, even though everybody needs dice. And it's, like, I love, like, you know, there's little dice rolling city building games, and you end up with these turn after turn of, oh, I stole all your money, so you can't do anything. I was like, oh, well, you give me 30 gold or whatever it is. And it's like, these games that should be like a quick half hour, 45 minute dice chucker takes like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Like, really? Am I really Like, that's what people criticize Munchkin for, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of what I know IDW for, unfortunately. So this one was a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, so it's good. But I think, I mean, we played the first scenario, and it is totally a learning scenario.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because it was like, I had 10 villains or whatever they were, henchmen, basically. Mm-hmm. And you had the 4 turtles, and you had to kill 8 of my 10, and I had to try to escape with 3. But with a couple of the side rules we had, like, where my can activate multiple times and yours can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your turtles, like, I guess they get multiple activations within one turn, but you couldn't really catch up with me. And then I could, like, ignore all terrain with some of mine. Right. And those rules just didn't seem to mesh. It just seemed like I could just turn and run,
right,
not put up a fight. And so that first one, I had assumed it was, oh, the turtles will just mow everybody down and we'll move on.
Right.
Like, who cares, right? Mm-hmm. It's an intro scenario. So I don't really have a good, like, weight. I think it's, as we always joke about, like, we're recounting recent plays, you know, for me to give it, like, a plus or minus. I definitely would want to play some of the later ones. But yeah. I think you're right. It's very family-friendly, so I'd be mm-hmm. interested in trying with my daughter.
Yeah.
I don't even know if she knows who the Ninja Turtles are. So she's definitely going to lose that theme, whereas, you know, I went to a 9-year-old's birthday when I was 9. You know, when my friend turned 9, we went to the theater and saw the original live-action Ninja Turtles movie. So
yeah.
I am right there in the heart of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it definitely, the theme catches me,
yeah.
as opposed to something like the others, which is fine, or Cthulhu to me, which is,
it's like,
fine,
horror,
but
yeah.
I don't understand, the draw isn't there for me. I'm
right.
not into that, whereas this I'm definitely into.
And I think the best thing this game does mechanically is that you share dice. So, like, you can position, so you roll the dice and it just stay there for the round, at least your activation dice, and then you could share among the turtles. So, like, I'm going to borrow your ninja star to attack at range. I'm going to borrow your skateboard to move. And you can really talk about that and set that up, and that encourages kind of a little bit of engagement post-turn. So, like, I'm always aware of when games try to engage the players throughout the turn, whether
right.
it's not your turn. So, like, you're not doing too much, but at least it gives, like, that player who has their dice in front of you, they can say to the other person who's their active turn, hey, I got this for you, you know, maybe this will help you, or whatever it is. So, it's not much, but it's a decent, like, way to engage people, especially if it's going to be for a family. Like,
yeah.
if you're a family, you want to keep that engagement up and talking and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, so any little thing that you could do for that end is good, and this game does at least kind of puts a nod to it, so I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you playing all 4 turtles is actually kind of a negative, too. Like, I don't think that's an optimum way to play. Maybe if you had 2 turtles and somebody else played with us, they had 2. Because you were kind of going, okay, this is Raph. Let me pick up Raph's cards.
Yeah.
Or Leo, who had 3 cards. Okay, I could play one of these, plus these dice, plus those dice. Like, it was almost like every time you were kind of resetting your thought process. But if you'd only had 1 or 2 turtles, you would know kind of your optimized move. Like, oh, this is what I want to do this turn.
Right.
Boom, it's your turn, you play it. Okay, back to me. But it would keep that, you know, that time frame moving,
right.
which I think would be good. So
cool.
I was neat on that. It was a little funny on the, like, the villain henchman end. I have, like, a deck of preset cards. You shuffle in the characters that are there, and it tells you how to make the deck. And it felt a little bit like, these are obviously, like, if I'm trying to stop you from killing me, I'm going to play all my defensive cards.
Yeah.
Anything that gives me defense and movement.
Right.
And so it was very clear what was optimal. I think it'll be more interesting, like, I wish games did this more often. I understand they want to build up and they want to make it simple, but, like, I want Shredder. Right? So, like, if I were demoing this game, if IDW said, okay, Brent, we're going to have you go demo this game, I would be like, okay, I'm demoing one where Shredder is in there, right? And I'm giving the Turtles an ally of Splinter or Casey Jones
or April O'Neil
or all of the, like, give me that one to demo to people. I understand you want it to be short and you want it to be basic, but, like, so I would imagine those cards, I'd have to go through and look, I didn't, but I imagine the Shredder cards probably have multiple types of abilities.
Right.
So yeah, I could still pick that optimal, but I've kind of got options. Like, ooh, do I want to put this Shredder card out to enhance my attacks for next round, so I'll really go all in trying to take Donatello down?
Right.
And I didn't really have that play. It was literally just, play this card that moves and gives you defense. Well, obviously, if I'm trying to run away from you, that's just, so that was kind of straightforward. But yeah, I mean, I even remember, like, Imperial Assault, like, okay, spoiler, the game's like 2-3 years old now, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think, like, the second mission, like, boom, an AT-ST comes knocking through the door. Maybe it's even the first one. That's great. Like, you had to get that on people's table, you know? Don't delay all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Get it there. So I feel like, you know, I want to get to Shredder or whoever else or whatever.
Krong! Oh, Rob Krong!
I think that's only in the cartoon, so he's probably going to appear. But anyway, yeah, so the villain, it felt a little bit like, all I'm trying to do is run away and stay alive and play these cards, so... I liked the mechanism there of, like, playing these cards and getting them to build, but it was weird they were all kind of similar.
Yeah.
It didn't make a big difference.
I find that a lot of games really struggle with that Overlord. Like, I almost want... It's almost like, in a game like this, so Descent has the app, Imperial Assault is gonna get the app, supposedly, if there's this all sorts of, like, problems with it. I almost wonder if, like, we're kind of evolving past... the Overlord as a thing.
Yeah.
You know, if we could just get that, you know, get the Overlord automated so that everybody could just be the hero, whatever it is.
Did you ever play Descent First Edition at all?
No, I always touched on a second.
So that one's interesting. Descent First Edition is like, you know, we were talking about, it's like 3 to 4 hours and the heroes level up from nothing to like maximum power. So there's no campaign. It's just boom, one quest, and then you do one. But that's supposed to be the point so that somebody's the Overlord and then the next, you know, 2 weeks later when you play again for 4 hours on a Saturday night, you switch.
Yeah.
But what was tough with that was there could either be a point where the heroes just crush you and you just try to save up power to just try to do one giant move and hope you win, or they're so beaten down, you feel cruel. Just I'll just drop pit traps in front of each one, and they're all just stuck, and that ends their turn, and then I'm going to spawn skeletons and spawn this and spawn that. And it was always like you could only spawn out of their line of sight, but there were always like sneaky corners where you could put a big... So you kind of either had this like, well, I have to be really, really cruel... And, of course, usually your Overlord player is kind of the one who knows the game the best. Yeah. You're like, well, now you're just throwing rules at people, right? So that one was interesting. It changed in the second edition where they kind of did more of the quests and campaigns and stuff. But, yeah, it was funny. It was almost like you could really just drop the hammer and just be so cruel. Now, I love something like Ghost Stories where the game is just so cruel. Sure, beat all four of us up. What do I care? I was doing that at the library at the Silk City Board Game Group. And I was like, you guys are going to die, just so you know. Like, you're done. Just wait till you die. And they were like, no, we'll do this. And, you know, one group just got decimated, then came back a little bit. Oh, and then they lost. Oh. And one group did really well, and then just boom, like the hammer just dropped, like instantaneously.
So Black Widow, no dice, no dial.
To me, that's fine when it's like co-op. But when you are that person just dropping the hammer and people just feel like it's cruel, even if the dice are rolling horrible for them and you're not really doing anything and that's your goal to beat them. But somehow it just, I don't know, for me, it's always, I'm not competitive enough to be like, and then next time you're going to do the same thing to me. But Ghost Stories, I love it. It's like, I hope I die. Like, it'll be great. It'll be
hard. Yeah. So, I've also played Mansion of Madness First Edition. With that Overlord, and it was, I mean, that app is so necessary. That Overlord is just, like, I just don't know of an adventure game. Like, you could do, like, a Fury of Dracula or Spectre Ops or something. The hide-and-seek ones, that is fine. You're not really an Overlord. You're just kind of, like, you know, doing stuff on your own. So that's cool. But, like the, you know, that bad guy versus all the good guys in a scenario game like this, you know, like, I was looking at your stuff. It was a little bit, maybe just weren't playing, didn't have enough access to good stuff, but... You know, I mean, let's get those apps in. Let's get those let's just go versus an AI so that you don't have to have that torn in between of like, oh, I'm either going to smash the players or be smashed by the players. Hard to get that balance going, seems like.
That's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Shadows of the Past, and like seven other dungeon crawl games.
Talked about it last time, so let's change it up to introduce some different stuff. So
no, it's totally fine. Yeah. I'm not saying yay or nay on it yet. I definitely want to try another one. It was enough for me to want to play it again. I know what you were saying, like what's going to set this apart from other things.
And, yeah, I mean, I guess the younger age, the family weight kind of sets it apart a little bit. But for me, I don't play with that age. I don't have a family at that level, so...
Right,
I have some other stuff, so, but it's still okay.
Cool. I'm going to talk about Escape Room: The Game. There's so many now. This is the new thing. This is the Spin Master one. So there's four thrilling escape rooms: Prison Break, Virus, Nuclear Countdown, and Temple of the Aztec. So we have a friend who just loves these things, and my wife really likes them a lot too. So I managed to acquire this one Christmas time. four, and we've played through all four of these now. So I've done all four. And yeah, they're neat. They're fun. It comes with this little like decoder thing that you use where you're trying to put keys in. I mean, this isn't spoilers. This is as soon as you open the box.
I see it on the side of the box right
there. Yeah. You have to put all these keys in to be able to unlock things and solving puzzles. So I would say the first two were very like straightforward. They were like puzzles, and you could solve a puzzle to get another clue to help you with the main puzzle. And it felt like enough people could be involved. There were enough puzzles going on. They were small and they were light, but there was enough things for people to do. When we got to the third one, the puzzles, like, so it ramps up. So the first two are 2 stars, and then 3 stars and 4 stars in difficulty out of 5, whatever that means. I mean, whatever. The third one was like, we kind of solved the puzzle because it made sense almost like thematically, but we couldn't quite do one of the puzzles, but we ended up being right. Just kind of, we got to a point where we had to guess. And then we got to a puzzle that was just, sorry for the pun, but outside the box. Like, and that's a... That's a great idea to be outside the box. Like, it was neat, but this one felt like wrong. Like, it wasn't fair of them to do that. It wasn't in the rules. Like, so I don't want to say what it is because I don't want to spoil for people. Right. And I'd love to know if people get it. I know Eric Sommer has done the first two, and I keep telling him, like, let me know when you do the third. Let me know when you do the third. And I've also heard of people talking about it and saying, oh, yeah, we barely got that one, but we had a minute left on the clock. So they must have solved it. But we just felt like it wasn't even in our realm of thought. And not like, oh, it was too hard for us, but literally it was nothing we ever would have done. And so what happens sometimes in this is the timer starts to feel arbitrary because we just want to solve it. We don't care about what time we solve it in. So like my wife and her friend and I, when we're playing some of these or even somebody else, they'll go like 45 minutes past the time. But by golly, they're going to solve it. I get a little less on that, so I'm like, well, let me look at the hint and tell you if I think you'll ever solve it. So eventually, after the time runs out, and we're only on, like, puzzle 2 out of 3, I said, you're never going to get it. I just have to tell you what it is, that kind of thing. So it was a little frustrating. We felt like, ah, that wasn't fair. We moved on, and we solved the last one, no problem. We did the other one a couple nights ago, the last one, the Temple of the Aztecs, and it was good. It was solved. The puzzles were a little bit tricky. We ran up a timer of kids having to go to bed. So I ended up having to look at a hint, just me. And then they had it and they were like off by a little factor. And I said, they're like, are we ever going to get it? I said, yes, but you'd have to reset and think the same way with something. And I said, let me just give you this one little hint. Gave them one little hint. Boom. They solved everything. So, and I still stayed with them because I only looked at that one. So I don't like looking at hints either. In this case, this one ran up against a bedtime with kids. You know how that is. We had to be done. But I think even still, it was about 25 minutes after the timer. So very smart people. I mean, we've done multiple escape rooms and gotten out in the time. So I don't know. I mean, it was fun. It was neat to me. I like those think fun ones better. I think they're like escape the room or something. I find those ones better. The puzzles are doable. Also, this one seemed frustrating that there was one puzzle with 4 people and I couldn't use the manipulatives because somebody's using them. And some of the things were puzzles double-sided. So if somebody's working on a puzzle on one side, you couldn't work on the one on the other side. Sometimes we wrote stuff on paper. So you're would literally copy it down on paper so we could use it, but that just wastes time. So
you're putting that in the game. That doesn't get, it isn't part of the game itself to just like let people do their own thing or solve it or anything like that.
What do you mean?
So like, I mean, those are my, so I haven't played this particular game, but I'm familiar with like this kind of concept and done escape rooms and everything. It's really open to that one person just does it. And then everyone else is kind of like following along. So like what you were describing was there's, you have, what is it? 4 puzzles, but then there's only, only 2 people can work on them at a time or something like that.
Right. There's really 1 puzzle at a time. A little, at first there's kind of a few, you know, it could be, but it seemed like as they got harder, there were less puzzles. It's almost like the easier because there was something for everybody to do. And that was the same with the Think Fun one. It was good. You'd open a packet and then it would be like, oh, there's 4 things here. So you kind of divide it up. Now, I always told people with that, it says like it goes up to 8. Never play with 8 competent adults because it doesn't work. I mean, my wife and I, my daughter did the Think Fun ones, and that was fine. Like, just with 2 adults and a kid. Like, you know, and one person working with her. But there would be multiple puzzles. So it'd be like, let me try this one. Oh, I'll move to this one. Oh, I'll come back to this. So if there were 4 people, everybody was involved. But it seemed like these ones, as they got more complicated, it was like four of the same puzzle.
Yeah.
Nobody got it. Or one puzzle with four people. Like, let me see that. Oh, let me see that. I got an idea now. Yeah. So the time is just ticking because mm-hmm. all four of us can't be working. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, when I've gone to do escape rooms, there are four things or 10 things right. that you can be doing.
There's a whole room. Like, you could go here and you could play with this part of the room.
And that's much better. It keeps everybody engaged. That engagement you're talking about wasn't there as I got to the harder ones. So was I frustrated because I didn't solve them in time? Maybe. Maybe I'm bitter because I like to do these things. But I felt like the timer was arbitrary. Like, I want to get through this regardless. Again, I looked at hints because of time coming up and a little bit before other people. But the first two were great. We solved them. We got through them all. That was not a problem. So those were good. The last two, again, they were harder, but it starts to get to that thing. You know, I hate those like riddles that are like, you're stuck in a room. There's a mirror. How do you get out? And then it's like, well, you look in the mirror and you saw yourself. So then you use the saw to cut a hole in the wall. And it's like, they're just making these connections that aren't actually real connections. And these kind of felt like that. Although I know there's people that are going to go, hey, my group did that. And we got out in 42 minutes. Hats off to you. Great job. You did it. So anyway, that's Escape Room the game.
All right. Cool. So for my last, I guess this is a group of games, I wanted to give a little bit of pub to a company. So I know there's a lot of gamers out there that think like kids games, that doesn't apply to me. But I think there's enough people out there where I really want to give a little bit of pub to a group called Peaceable Kingdom. So they make children's cooperative games. So you're talking 4 and up, 6 and up, really simple stuff. So my job is I'm a psychotherapist. So I'm a shrink basically in parlance, but I don't have people on the couch. I'm just talking to them. And when I have kids, you gotta play games. I mean, that's what you do. You play, but, you know, I don't want to play Chutes and Ladders and I don't want to play the Game of Life. That stuff actually, it works. People, the kids love it, but I'm like, bleh. I can't. This is like melting my brain. This is so simple. But so then I found these games, the Peaceful Kingdom games, and I'm talking the biggest seller they have is called Hoot Owl Hoot. It is a so it's basically a set collection color matching game. You're trying to get there's a circular board and it's a track. So the track has like all these different colored dots and you have to get all these owls along the track into the middle by playing matching colors. And then there's like these suns. You have to get the owls into the middle before the sun kind of reaches the end of its track. And the kids have to cooperate and they have to talk and they have to like play the right thing. If they play the wrong thing, then the owl can't move as far. And, you know, so, and you could kind of vary the difficulty depending on how old the kid is. So that one I've done really well. There's another game called Race for the Treasure. Race for the Treasure is basically baby Carcassonne. You're laying tiles, right? And then you have to lay tiles across a map. And you have to lay tiles in a way where you're kind of getting these keys that are dotted around this grid before all the ogre tiles get pulled. Simple as all get out. But I've played this with 4-year-olds, 6-year-olds. 10-year-olds is a little bit old for that stuff. But, you know, with that age, oh man, like they were like lighting up. And to me, it's like, these are simple games. Like I could just do this, whatever. But these kids were just like having a great time, like Race for the Treasure. He's like, oh my God, there's an ogre coming. And it's like, wow, this is amazing.
Nice.
And you know, in therapy, you know, you work through their anxieties that way. You know, how did you handle that? And if they lose, they get frustrated. And how did you handle frustration? So there's all sorts of ways I could, if this was a therapy podcast, I'll go off on that. But the fact that these games were good enough that I'm not totally bored and they're evoking this stuff in the kids was really good. And there's also a game, Matt Leacock is designed a game for the Mole Rats in Space, which is basically Pandemic meets Chutes and Ladders. So, okay, Chutes and Ladders, you put a game on that? I'm in. Let's do it. Component quality is not great, but it's not meant to be great. I think they use recycled materials. So they've won awards and stuff for like green products. So don't expect like a big production or anything like that. But, you know, if you want really solid games, you're a family oriented person, or you just, you know, you or maybe like you're like at a library or something like that. There's all sorts of scenarios in which you want to play games with kids. Peaceable Kingdom is the company and they have a line of games that are really, really good.
Yeah, we saw them at New York Toy Fair. And I know we picked up stuff for them, so I think that if people are looking for them, we're going to start carrying their games in the Time Machine.
Nice.
So people have gone to the portal. There's a giant toy store across the street that you should check out. I always point people from the portal over there because they don't even know sometimes it exists.
Right.
Which is cool because the store's portal's been around for like 3 or 4 years now, and it's neat that people don't even know it's attached to a giant toy store across the street. But so we should have them over there and that. And I think the price point on their games is pretty solid.
Yeah, you're looking at $15-16 a game.
Yeah, so.
Which, you know, good. if the kid is, like, if you have two kids, oh, yeah, you're good to go.
Yeah.
You know?
That's awesome.
Or just, you know, parent a kid or whatever it is. Like, I've used these in therapy. They asked for them. Not all of them are, you know, some of them, like, I tried one Stone Soup, which is basically memory. I could do that with a deck of cards. So, you know, they're not all winners, but if you kind of look at the really good ones, I recommend Hoot Owl Hoot, Mole Rats in Space. It's Matt Leacock, so how can it be bad? I haven't played it yet, but I've seen videos and it looks really good. So just, you know, just a shout out to all the parents and people who love kids out there. So all regular gamers, come on back in. We'll talk about regular games now.
It makes me so sad though to talk about those things because I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go out, I'm gonna get one of these, I'm gonna try it, but I can't trust my daughter anymore. Like, it's starting to pass her age. I mean, she beats me a Ticket to Ride.
Okay, yeah.
I, you know what I mean? Like, we could, and she'll still have fun. She'll play some of the older things and stuff. She still loves Sleeping Queens and that. So I could. I'm not saying I won't, okay. But it's just one of those things, like, I can't go buy 10 of these and try them out now.
Yeah,
it's just one of those things. I need to find one. So Hoot Owl Hoot, try, or the Matt Leacock one at some point.
The Mole Rats of Space, Race for the Treasure, Cauldron Quest. There's a bunch of them that are really good.
Yeah.
Like, my 10-year-old was like, oh, you know, let's play, I don't know, Dr. Eureka or something for the older kids. But this one, from 4 to like 7 or 8.
Oh, okay, so maybe really still in that wheelhouse.
Really solid.
Awesome. Well, that's what's on our table. Let us know what's on yours. All right, for our discussion topic today. That's my editing technique. For our discussion topic today, we're going to talk about Jason's podcast, which he already mentioned a lot about the Table for One podcast. And also Anthony's on there with you, correct?
Anthony Chatfield. He is from Board Gamers Anonymous. He is the editor, and he's like the reason that the podcast even exists. It was his baby, and I happen to latch on to that. I bring the enthusiasm.
Nice.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that, and then of course your podcast is about solo gaming, but more as you were alluding to before. So it's funny. I wrote on here solo gaming versus non-solo gaming, but I guess I don't want to call it regular gaming. That sounds multiplayer gaming, I guess. I'm not sure how to distinguish the two, but just this idea of, you know, what are the differences and why one versus the other. And of course, I went back to listen to several episodes. I wasn't quite dead on because you were telling me a bunch of games. You're like, oh yeah, we talked about that one. I didn't get through the whole thing, admittedly. But you said you had several episodes, and I listened to one where you were talking about, like, why would people solo game? So why don't you give us some of those?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you, like, the basic rundown is that, like, when someone thinks of, like, a solo gamer, they get that stigma, right? Low player count, the podcast, they talk about 1- and 2-player games. They've talked about this as well. We've had a couple of threads on our Facebook and all that kind of stuff, which, by the way, there is an awesome solo gamer Facebook group. It's about 3,000 members strong, and they post more than anybody I've ever seen. Wow. They post, like, you get 40-50 posts a day from people. You, like, the half of them are pictures of unopened boxes of One Deck Dungeon, which is not great. That's like that become the ID card. It's like, oh, I'm a member of this group now, I have One Deck Dungeon. Don't need those pictures, but like, they're so active. And so that really kind of brings me to my main point about solo games. I won't bury the lead, I'll just kind of hit you. Solo gamers are not antisocial. Like, there's this stigma that, like, oh, you won't play games alone, why don't you join the rest of us and whatever. But like, to me, solo gamers are enthusiastic gamers. Solo gamers are people who, they love games. They don't hate people, they love games, right? They love games so much that they're not going to let whatever barriers are in the way of playing games stop them from getting the games to the table, right? So there's all sorts of reasons why a solo gamer games alone, right? So you can't get your group together. You're the only game people you have kids and they live so far away. We had one person who was responded on our other podcast. She takes care of horses.
Right.
Like, she's like, you know, that's her job that takes her away. Some people, and this is kind of the public service announcement, like, they're disabled. Like, we have a listener, I had a listener, this was powerful for me, you know, because I'm just like, you know, some schmuck just doing a podcast, but like, oh, you know, this guy's going through chemo. And he's like, right. Wow, thank you for putting on the show. I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. So there's like real barriers to like, you know, for people playing. And it's not just that. I think, you know, there is that sense of like the solo gamer is an introvert. That's definitely true. So like people who are just kind of shy, they get that little bit of social anxiety. They're a little, you know, they're new to a place. And did you just raise your hand because you're shy or?
No, I'm not shy.
I'm like, you lie. You're not shy.
No, not gotcha. In that category.
So, but you know, there's a lot of us that are. Like, I'm an introvert, right? I can, you know, I'm, you know, pretty energetic person. But at the end of the day, like when I'm kind of spent all this energy, I just want to go in my basement and, you know, kind of not mess with stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and you know, and rather than like, you know, go and either risk, you know, freaking yourself out or like being a crab and bringing everybody else down, it's like, you know what, I'm just gonna get my fun doing this, you mm-hmm. know. So there's all sorts of reasons why a gamer will game solo, which doesn't have to do with that. Like, so like, you know, being shy is not the same thing as being antisocial. It's not the same thing as being averse to people. It's just, you know, this is how I prefer to play. I have these barriers and I'm not going to let these barriers stop me from playing, you know? So and we, in the podcast, me and Anthony both recognized, like, we, like, when Anthony first started the podcast, he really expected to have, like, a couple dozen listeners.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, who could be interested in all this, right? And then when the podcast started hitting and we started having, like, we went to the One Player Guild and we invited one of the guys on there. The guy's name is Kevin Erskine. He runs the top 100 solo games, like, poll. So if you go to BGG One Player Guild, you'll have like the top 100 solo games.
Hmm.
And we had him on, and that was like, that almost hit like 1,000 downloads.
Nice.
What? You know, this is...
Yeah.
That's like a huge number for us. And then, and as we kind of gone on and had more guests and designers, you know, they're telling us, like, when we reached out to Ignacy, we're thinking, oh, he probably gets 100 of these. But he responded, or like his person responded back to us like, oh, solo gamers? Yeah, I'm in. I'm going to talk to you about First Martians. There's solo mode here.
Yeah.
That was like an in. Like, that was like a recognized thing. It's like, oh, this solo gaming community is hungry for games. They want stuff. And they, like, we actually just had a designer reach out and wanted to talk about a Kickstarter. It's like, oh, we have a solo mode. Get that out to the community. You know, enthusiasm. That's like the point. That's kind of the thing that I'm trying to get across is solo gamers are enthusiastic gamers. We won't let our barriers stop us from gaming.
Yeah, you're really seeing it in Kickstarters. I mean, Kickstarter's pretty much a stretch goal or a promise or something there, or just right off the bat, you see the right. One-player label on a lot of Kickstarters.
Right.
It's like they know, like you were saying, it's an extra incentive to back a project, whereas... I suppose something that's multiplayer, you'd go out to a store to buy, you'd then be playing with a group that's at that store. So I don't know.
Right.
Just a little bit of a mentality there.
I think there's a couple reasons there. First of all, Kickstarters are expensive as hell.
Yeah.
A lot of like the really, you know, popular Kickstarters, the ones that get a lot of attention. If you're getting a game that's expensive and you can't play test it, you're only watching videos, you can't like watch big reviews or get it to the table first. You want to be able to make sure you get your most bang for the buck.
Right.
And that's what a solo mode does. Like, if you get a game with a solo mode, you know, like, even though it's like some big $150 miniatures game, you know you're going to get it to the table. And you know you're going to get plays out of it. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But it's much better proposition, much better value proposition than just kept backing a game that has no multiplayer or whatever it is. Smaller game, yeah, you mean, whatever. But if you release a bigger game... A miniatures game, Lord help you if you don't have a solo mode.
Yeah.
Like, we talked with Andrew Parks, who designed the Dungeon Alliance Kickstarter, which just ended, and the first thing, like, he designed the game, like, the game was pretty much in its alpha working, and there, you know, people were looking at him going, well, where is a solo? Well, let me get that in there. The other reason besides the enthusiasm part and not overcoming barriers, like, solo gaming, it's a very big value proposition. Like, you can get more game out of this thing if it has a solo mode, you know? And not only that, like, I'm not just talking about in-the-box solo modes. I'm talking about solo variants. So there's a huge community of people who will take a game and they'll just kind of tinker under the hood. And they'll come, oh, I want to play this solo, you know? So, like, Through the Ages is not a solo game, but I love it because someone came up with a solo mode that works.
Yeah.
And it was great, you know? Like, The Others was something that wasn't out of the box, you know? So I was able to get that game played because someone had made, like, a deck that automated the Overlord. So I was like, okay, I can play this. I can play this now. I allow myself to buy this now.
And it's interesting from, like, the retail end, having a solo game on the shelf at the store, the library, would be a little interesting. Although, midweek, if somebody came in, right, they could sit to play that. But again, mm-hmm. it's not going to get pulled off the shelf in that kind of space. But somebody coming in to buy something, I would think that'd be entice you more, right? I'm going to go buy this at lunchtime, knowing I can crack this open after dinner tonight and play the solo mode, so I don't have to wait, like, oh, I'll buy this on a Tuesday, but my game group is until Saturday.
Right.
Which, again, that's, you know, that's obviously that mentality of Cult of the New kind of thing. But still knowing, hey, I could crack this one-player mode, play tonight, I would think that would entice somebody even more to buy something in retail versus, well, I could just order this elsewhere and wait for it to come in and wait, play with my group next week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So they have that. So that's kind of an interesting piece there. My solo playing totally came about from becoming a rules teacher.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I love learning and teaching games. That's my favorite thing. You will see me sometimes. Thursday nights I'm a little different lately, but there are times, like, especially when I do the library, just teach. That's all I like to do. I just move on to teach. Yeah. Just love introducing people. So
it's almost very like you're often, a teacher in real life.
I know, yeah. Sitting down to learn the games was a big part, but even back to when I was a kid playing Axis and Allies, I remember setting the whole thing up just to run strategies. Let me see what happens if Japan tries this. Let's see what happens if Russian goes all-out offense. And I would just run those and run everybody else normal. So I did kind of solo play that, and that was kind of weird back in the day because you're literally playing others. I have the bonus, as I was telling you, my short-term memory isn't so good, and somehow I'm good at just saying, I don't care what information I already know. I could just go with what would I know, mm-hmm. and somehow I can play from that. So I can play an LCG, a competitive LCG, and play both just to see where the decks would go and what they would do. Even though, okay, I know they have that card. Well, if I know the deck really well, I assume they have that card and play to it. Or sometimes I'll just say, well, I'm going to play this hoping they don't have that card. Even though I know they do, saying I would do that anyway, I can react to kind of that. So I've done that with some games. The actual soloable games then came out and was like, oh, I could actually play this game and do the challenge of the game as opposed to playing against myself. And the big one I remember was Ghost Stories, because I love playing Ghost Stories. I'll play with people anytime, but I really wanted to beat that game.
Yeah.
And it was when I sat down and said, don't mess with my strategy. I'm playing all four of these monks. I don't want anybody else to have any input. I'm going to try to figure out how to beat this. And then I was able to kind of beat it. And then just playing with more people, we were able to beat it as a group. But that was my first time of really like, I don't want you people messing with my plans. I'm just going to do what I say and what I think is best. I don't know that in the end I did have a better idea than other people, but it was kind of fun to just have my own say on what happens, you know?
So it's funny you mentioned about Risk, because the first solo gamers were war gamers.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking, you know, before this whole kind of gaming boom or whatever it was, I mean, people were putting multiple sides of a combat out and all these different games, you know, like Fortune America or Risk or whatever it is. And then, you know, like the lesser known games. There's a ton of war games out there, and they're still being pumped out every year. If you go to the One Player Guild, there's a lot of those old school war gamers. I was not one, so I just kind of hearing this secondhand. But that's where the one player thing started with the war games.
Right.
And then it's actually with cooperative games in general. So in 2008, you got Pandemic. And then shortly thereafter, there was that first generation of cooperative games. Ghost Stories is one of them. Robinson Crusoe, a little bit later than that. Mm-hmm. That basically they're big. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. They're big. They're giant solitaire games, but they have the multiple players of it. So I could see a scenario where, like, someone's just alpha gaming and they want to just take over everything. And it's like, I don't want to play with this guy. But then you play it solo and it's like, you're not alpha gaming anybody.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, like a little bit like what you were describing is like, you know what, I'm just going to figure this out, right? So, like, So then the cooperative games kind of evolved a little bit into what I call the adventure puzzle. And those are the best solo games out there. I feel like, you know, along with, you know, all the reasons I stated that why kind of on the gamer end solo gaming happened, on the designer end and on the game end, the games just got better. Right. So then, you know, the early cooperative games kind of evolved. Mage Knight, Robinson Crusoe, Lord of the Rings card game. These are like acclaimed games. Pathfinder Adventure card game. These games that are like adventures, so they're long and they're scenario-based and they're campaign-based. Or scenario-based, at least. They meant the scenarios might not be linked, but at least you're doing different stuff. So then those games have just kind of developed. Now there's like a million of them.
Yeah.
You know? And Gloomhaven is another one. First Martians is coming out. So then, you know, so that there's that end of it. And then I think there's, because it's not just that, there's also like the strategy game, which is the kind of engine building games. So like the first Euros that really hit big here in the States was like Catan and Puerto Rico. Those are very interactive games, right? So then you eventually get a game like Agricola. Agricola hit basically the same time as Pandemic. And that's, you don't really interacting in that game. You know, you're building your engine. And you're hopefully your people aren't starving. So once that kind of hit, and Uwe is kind of, every game that he has a solo mode, which is basically beat a high score.
Right.
You start to get this other end of solo gaming, which scratches that heavy strategy itch. So like Scythe is now an example of a game that's like that game.
Yeah.
But they really cracked the code of a solo mode in a different way than the adventure game did. So now you have this very kind of rich range of games. And then the third game that you're going to see people play is the little card games. So like we're talking Friday. We're talking Onirim. The Oniverse line of games. One Deck Dungeon is a dice game, but it's kind of in that line of like right. Quick and
yeah.
You know, and there's a couple of others that kind of came out too. So you have these like three different streams of games, and I'm not even counting the war games, which are still coming out. You know, I think Thunderbolt Apache Leader just came out a couple of years ago, and that's like, you know, people are really excited about that. Mm. Don't quote me. I don't know if that's the one, but whatever. So like, it's rich, like, and these are all playable. Like, I don't like calling them solo games. Like, Friday's a solo game. You cannot play that game with another person.
Yeah.
But all these other games are like solo-able, or like they're 1-4 or whatever it is, and it just opens up so much more possibility to play. And you get into it, and it's like, wow. Like, in our podcast, we talk about almost every game. You know, there's certain games we're not going to talk about. Yeah. You know, we're not going to talk about Blood Rage. You know, I don't think that there's going to be a I don't think we're going to interview Eric Lang, because Eric Lang doesn't have that in his design, you know. So there's a definite boundary where we still want to be kind of ourselves, but within what we're doing, like, there's a huge range of people we can talk to and games to explore, you know. So we just happen to kind of have this angle on it, but it's big, you know, and that's, we're really excited about that.
Well, I'm excited for the Resistance solo mode. I mean, that's
Saboteur just had a solo mode.
There you go. Well, you know what was interesting is the app for Mysterium that came out.
Right.
I don't understand how. I never tried it, but we play that a lot. That's like my wife's favorite game, and I can't imagine. Like, okay, I think actually Eric said it on Dice Tower, and he was like, I felt like maybe like I should go out, have dinner with the app first, like play some mini golf. Tell some jokes, like at least get to know the app before I understand what cards they're playing to me and what I should understand from that. But I thought that was pretty good. Like,
yeah, I haven't played the Mysterium app yet. I might have to pick that up. It's actually on sale right now, so I don't know when this drops. But I think Asmodee is having a giant sale on their big games, Cult Express and Pandemic and whatever it is.
Nice. Cool. Well, anything else on solo games?
Just, you know, we're at Table for One podcast. Like I said, we might not be Table for One for that much longer, but we are for now. Lots of great interviews. A lot of good stuff for people who they aren't necessarily solo gamers, but they, you know, they're interested in the content. It's a big tent, and it has the most enthusiastic crowd of gamers that I've ever played with. You know, and I, you know, it's not just like I'm in my cavern playing by myself. You know, I play by myself or whatever to do whatever, to learn a game, like Brent was saying. I'm confusing Brant and Brian. How terrible is that?
We're so similar.
So then, you know, I'll do whatever, but then I'll bring that out and I'll share it, you know, and I'll post a picture or I'll interact with somebody. I'll make a friend because of this solo thing. So like, whatever, if my mission and Anthony's mission on the podcast as well, and a couple other, like the low player count people, the one player guild people, is to kind of like open this as a viable kind of alternative to people who are a little bit tired of video games. They're a little bit tired of TV. They're a little bit tired of, like, you know, watching a screen, you know, because like, yeah, you know, because for whatever reason, you're just glued to the screen all the time. And you just want to have that access to different parts of your imagination. You want to play those strategy games. You want to use your imagination. You could, solve puzzles and everything. This is really, really fun, you know, and that's the reason we do what we do. So that's kind of my evangelical soapbox. Nice. That kind of thing.
So you got the table one for pot for one pod. Sorry, I'll say it. Table for One Podcast. What other places in social media can people find you?
We are currently the sister podcast of BoardGamersAnonymous.com. So you can look at us at BoardGamersAnonymous.com. We also, Twitter is at BGA Podcast. So at this point, we're going to, you know, Anthony kind of is doing both podcasts. So we're, you know, we're kind of on that chip for now, which is cool. They do a lot of, you know, they have their own stuff that going on there. Like that podcast just is like, are you addicted to games? Here, yeah. we're just going to talk about games, you know. Me and Anthony, we get into a little bit more of the discussion stuff like you and Brian do and people on there. That podcast is really focused on games, but that's cool too. So we're going to be kind of doing on that ship for a little while. So yeah, we're pretty happy.
Awesome. Well, let us know out there your solo gaming experiences, or if you have any questions about solo gaming, you can direct them at us, portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com, or you can direct them over to Board Games Anonymous and the Table for One Podcast. All right, that's it. There you go. Episode number 42 is in the books. It's Rogue One, with the Table for One Podcast. And Jason, thank you so much, Jason, for coming on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, super fun. And thanks for coming over to play Ninja Turtles. So we'll find some other stuff to do as well. We don't just have to solo game. We can play together sometimes, too. That'll be good. So awesome. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Until next time, I'm the Brant, and with me is...
Jason.
And we hope you step into the portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on March 20th, 2017. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Gaming Podcast is also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, including Board Gamers Anonymous, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening.